Little reminder, Death by Umbrella, The 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons, is out. Bookgasm said the book is lovingly written with verve for the viscera. If you have a verve for the viscera, you'll like it too. It's also got a foreword by our main man, Lloyd Kaufman of Troma. Can't beat that. Let's get this thing started.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind a Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right?
They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord! It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait! There's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. Downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 116, Lewis Coates, a.k.a. Luigi Cozzi's Contamination.
Yeah, man.
We're circling around the Big Apple in a helicopter.
Yeah, well,
what could this mean?
Obviously, there's got to be an abandoned vessel somewhere.
Oh, I was going to say a cannibal movie, but no. We are in New York City.
Uh-huh.
This is Italian.
Right.
And there are no cannibals.
Well,
where are we?
I was thinking zombie, you know, where there's an abandoned ship and they're circling around New York City.
Well, we're not going to abandon ship here, even though Lewis Coates is not exactly Martin Scorsese in his prime.
Hey,
he was a protege, of Dario Argento.
I don't claim he is a protege. In fact, right now, I mean, not only is he a protege, he's an employee of Argento because he...
Oh, is he getting him coffee?
Profondo Rosso is a store that Argento owns in Italy.
Hmm.
And it's a store that sells horror memorabilia as well as a lot of Argento memorabilia. And it's...
Where can I get my Luigi Cozzi memorabilia?
And Profondo Rosso. It is so, he's there. He works there.
There's a pressing demand for this.
You know,
there's also
sort of like an Argento museum underneath. Mm. I would love to go to Profondo Rosso one of these days. I've been to Italy before, but I never made my way to
Profondo
Rosso.
Well, if someone would profund our trip over there, then we'll definitely go. That would be fantastic.
Of course, Profondo Rosso means deep red, and that's one of the master's greatest films. Of course, the master being Dario Argento, Luigi Cozzi. Luigi Cozzi, listen, I mean, this man, he is a protege of Argento. He made a few giallos. He also made the wonderful Star Crash, which I mean, I adore this film. He made the Canon-produced Lou Ferrigno Hercules. And he made this wonky, lovable film from 1980 called Contamination. And, I mean, a lot of people have said this is an Alien ripoff, but it's not an Alien ripoff. It's just, except for the fact that you have an alien in the movie, how is this an Alien ripoff?
Yeah, and just because whatever alien presence makes itself known through an abandoned vessel, that automatically doesn't make it alien. But as one of the characters says,
they're up in space. They find an abandoned vessel in space.
No, a vessel is a vessel. As the character here said, this is straight out of Joseph Conrad. Mm. So there you go. It doesn't. So obviously, Conrad preceded any sort of designs on alien vessels and whatnot. So
you're saying that Alien was a Heart of Darkness ripoff?
Maybe. But really, yeah. How else are you supposed to be introduced to an alien presence?
Right.
Come on. Like, that's what makes it exciting, that the crew died.
Right.
And but beyond that, there's no Ripley. We don't have any of the other affectations of your alien, although some of the set design and some of the uniforms were a tad alien-esque, but still, it diverges far enough from Alien that you needn't even touch that.
To be honest with you, if anything, this reminded me more of that god-awful pseudo-alien prequel, Prometheus, that came out a couple of years ago.
Oh my god.
I actually got more of a Prometheus vibe, revisiting Contamination, than I did Alien. I love Alien. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of the sequels of Alien. I know people worship Aliens, the one directed by James Cameron.
Yeah, I prefer the Ridley Scott myself.
No, yeah, because, I mean, Aliens, to me, was an action film. Whereas Alien is pure horror. Alien is a slasher film in space. The queen, the alien queen, she might as well be Michael Myers. She's stalking this crew.
For sure.
Yeah, you know, and of course you got the iconic chestburster scene. I mean, Alien is a horror film. Aliens is sci-fi action. And then, of course, there was Alien 3, and then Alien Resurrection, Alien vs. Predator, and, you know, and whatever. I'm sure they're rebooting it somewhere for, you know, another, maybe it's going to be Alien versus Alvin the Chipmunks.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no clue. But, I mean, we're not talking about Alien, we're talking about Contamination. This is, I mean, yes, there is an alien presence. In this case, these are alien avocados. They're not avocados, they just look like gigantic avocados. Because when they spot this abandoned vessel in the New York Harbor, they board the ship. A number of people board the ship, including a policeman by the name of Eris. And as they're walking on the ship, they realize there's not a single crew member in sight. Until they open up a closet door, and one crew member falls out.
Mendez.
Yeah, Mendez falls out, and they remark that he looks like he has been torn apart, almost as if he exploded. And yeah, he did. I mean, he looks
worse. He's a bloody mess, yeah.
He's a bloody mess. As they continue exploring, they go out into the bowels of the ship, and they find crates.
Yes.
Now, this was meant to be delivered in New York City. Crates of Colombian coffee. And for some reason, this really unnerves one of the investigators.
Yeah.
He's not unnerved by Mendez, yeah. Torn apart, but the Colombian coffee unnerves him. Maybe he's a tea drinker. I don't know.
Yes. And he utters that immortal horror line, cliché. This place gives me the creeps, which is said in at least 100 different horror films. So yes, for some reason, he's Java really gets him unnerved.
I guess he's hypersensitive to caffeine.
Yes.
Some people can't take more than one or two cups. But one of the boxes conveniently falls open, and instead of, you know, your nice, fine, dark roast, there are these, what can only be, like I said before, what can only be described as giant avocados. They're green. They're covered in
goo.
You know, goop, sort of like alternate green and yellow paint. They're prickly. They're pulsating. And they don't look, for want of a better word, kosher. You know
no,
what I mean?
No.
They look dangerous. But you've always got to have this hubristic investigator scientist. This is where Prometheus is happening. Like, oh,
yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it. He goes and he's like, he's going to pick it up. One of the party says, don't pick it up. They're dangerous. He goes, don't worry. I turned to user watch and said, yeah, famous last words.
Yeah.
Because
kaboom.
Kaboom. Yeah. The thing explodes, spilling green goo all over him and everybody else in the party, and then they explode in turn.
Yeah.
One by one. They all just explode in glorious fashion.
One with a pustule, I think, throbbing in the neck, and then boom. The others, just their innards just open outward.
Yeah.
And viscera just gets spread all over. A really amazing, amazing way to launch this thing.
Yes, and unfortunately, at this point, the movie does slow down quite a bit as we lead more towards the denouement, but there's still enough going for it to be quite intriguing and quite entertaining.
Yeah.
Luckily, there was a lone survivor, and he's this police lieutenant, Tony Harris, and he's quarantined. He's in some highly classified military bunker somewhere, going through all this, you know, decontamination and quarantining and debriefing and whatnot. And, of course, they've got to call in the army. Well,
And the lieutenant comes in, and she's a formidable force. She wants to get to the bottom of what exactly happened in this vessel.
Stella Holmes comes in.
Yeah.
But not before enacting emergency plan number 7, which is interesting. Like, was this is 2 before plan 9, perhaps?
Yes.
I mean, when people talk about plan 9 from outer space, they're always like, well, whatever happened to plan 1 through 8?
What do the Seventh-day Adventists do in the other 6 days? And so many questions.
There you go. What I'm saying is maybe we know at least one plan before plan 9.
Well, clearly they didn't work because they needed to get to 7, so who knows? Anyway.
He debriefs him. He's not very happy about being quarantined.
Yeah, and being debriefed himself because he's naked in there and complaining about the cold. So, yeah, he's stuck there, and she fills him in on what's going on. And then this is, as you said, this turns into a procedural where they got to figure out the origins of this shipment, this foreign shipment to New York City, and they track it down to a import-export business in the Bronx.
Right.
And
amazingly, I mean, this Colonel Holmes, I mean, she's got the intuition. She goes, there's one thing they determined.
Women's intuition?
Yeah. Well,
or just general intuition.
Just intuition. Yeah. Why
gender I don't know. I thought there was only women's intuition.
She's got the shinning, okay? Yeah. Because she determines that these nebulous importer-exporters, she says, call intuition, but they want to put them in the sewers.
Yeah, like alligators from urban legend lore. And
whatever.
Yeah, the
whatever
sewers
reason.
Are, they're moist, damp, warm. They're perfect incubators for pathogens.
Yeah.
Don't get any ideas, Al-Qaeda. But yeah, and so she intuits that this is the thing to do. Now I'm scared about everything. our sewers, our like food supply, everything is going to be like, you know, contaminated in this contamination here. So she finds out, they track it down to a warehouse where these three goons watching over this shipment.
Yeah, there are all these gigantic pulsing avocados. And a shootout ensues. And in that shootout, the goons, you know, one of the eggs gets shot, blows up real good.
Yeah.
The goons get covered with goon, and they explode it. Again, gross fashion. One of them was so obviously a dummy, falling to his death. He had this hilarious smile plastered on his face as this mannequin just, you know, explodes in the falls.
Yeah, that was absolutely amazing.
So, they now need to figure out, like, where did this stuff come from? And they remember that there was this doomed mission to Mars. In this mission, there were two astronauts, one being
L. Ron Hubbard. Okay, Hubbard was one of them.
Colonel Ian Hubbard, played by the wonderful Ian McCullough, who we love from Zombie Holocaust.
A.K.A. Dr. Butcher.
Right, we also love him from Zombie. Actually, my copy of the Blu-ray right here is autographed by Ian McCullough. I purchased it right off him at Horrorama. The other astronaut is Harrison. And what they determine is that these two men went to Mars, but only one came back.
Yes.
And despite the fact he came back, he's not the same. He's somehow, he's PTSD, he's some sort of weird crackpot. As the man himself says, he was kicked out of the service like some crazy, lying visionary. Mm-hmm. He's living in his in Bronx or Queens. Mm-hmm. He's
a drunk, down on his luck, and just clearly traumatized by the experience.
Right. And Fox tracks him down, and they determine that, you guys brought something back. Something came back with you. And then we get to this flashback scene where he envisions, and this is a drunken Ian McCullough delivering this monologue, and, I mean, Ian McCullough, you're a decent actor, but this scene, this was terrible acting, it's the most egregious. He's talking about him and Harrison coming upon these green pustule egg-like sacks. Before I continue to talk about the eggs, Chris, what about the sound of the eggs?
Oh, I can't even reproduce it here. Like,
you were doing it as you're watching the movie.
Yeah, something to that effect. I wasn't aware that was not the soundtrack. It was the actual sound emanating from the egg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, and as they're flashing back, It's pretty cool. Like they walk through the red caves of Mars, and you see these eggs, and then there's a long shot, and it's clearly like a paper mache set.
Yeah, it looks like an intestinal wall of some sort, but in the foreground is clearly
filled with dozens and dozens of green olives.
Yes.
I don't know if they're pitted or not, but they're olives. They were fucking olives, man.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing ingenuity.
Amazing hubris. I mean, yeah. The fact that they would try and pass them olives as these gigantic alien eggs, I love it. I love the fact that the Italians, they do this.
And funny you should mention olives, because obviously a key ingredient of a martini, shaken, not stirred. And the Bondian elements of this thing are really quite tremendous.
Yeah.
We'll get to that, but the clothing, the duds worn by our antagonist,
Who we're not going to reveal who he is, but we should just say right now. Yeah.
You said it's like just so bang on. His Blofeld, his Dr. Evil in this ridiculous jacket. It really is.
Oh yeah, no, he was Blofeld from head to toe. It was hilarious. And I mean, all again, like the whole Bondian convention of the antagonist, telling his entire nefarious plot to the hero. Yeah. But I mean, we're sort of getting ahead of ourselves because our three intrepid heroes. I mean, this is Hubbard, Holmes, and Eris. They get off to Colombia because I mean, obviously, coffee, Colombia, right? So they got to find where the shipment, this importer exporter, where these eggs are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, they land in Colombia, and it's in the middle of whatever the Colombian version of Mardi Gras is. Yeah. It's hilarious. Like, in these movies, whenever they land in some foreign locale, it's always in the middle of some sort of festivity. I love it. Like, it reminds me of Howling 2.
Yeah.
Your sister's aware, when they land in Prague, Slovakia, and there's some sort of bizarre street parade going on.
Well, as I said, why not show a Mardi Gras or fertility ritual? Like, it sure beats the hell out of showing some Medellin office building. Like, you're in Colombia, might as well stereotype the natives to the full hilt, which is the whole point of most of these cannibal movies, of which this is in the same period.
Yeah.
They're going to a foreign locale. Let's fucking show it up here. Hey, it could have been worse. Everyone could have been on coke. That's really the only way Colombia ever gets itself into any movie is through some cocaine dealer. So this is different.
Yeah,
I mean, give them something.
Okay, yeah. I mean, there was the natives that were dancing around. They were restless. They were basically speaking in cannibal speak. Mm-hmm. Can we get a little cannibal speak from you?
Oh my god!
We didn't get any alien sounds. Come on, give us.
Oh,
little...
I'm put on the spot here.
Yes, you are.
Oh, what's the sound they make? What is the one they do on every movie?
One guy smoking a cigar that's about as big
as his arm, yeah.
Bigger than his arm, yeah. I mean. But that's neither here nor there. The reality is, these three are going to get to the bottom of this. They're going to figure out, the provenance of these alien eggs.
And yeah, don't notify the FDA or anything, or put the word out that there's shipments of coffee that you should maybe not be selling in your corner grocery store. Mm-hmm. Just go to the source of things. Mm-hmm. Much like McCullough did, just get away from his day job, go down to the islands and try to figure out what was going on in Dr. Butcher.
Mm-hmm.
They go straight to the source. You got to admire their gumption.
Mm-hmm. Or in Zombie. He does the same thing. He just goes right there. That's what McCullough does. McCullough is always some sort of high-ranking something or other.
Yeah.
Just abandons everything on a dime to fly off to some far-flung locale to get to the bottom of be it cannibals, zombies, or alien eggs. You got to love McCullough for that.
Amazing.
In their investigation, they're not there under the radar. The bad guys know they're there. At one point, Stella Holmes is taking a shower. An alien egg has been planted within her shower. Yeah. Will she escape? Will she not? It's all just par for the course, to be honest with you. But the denouement is pretty fucking awesome. Ultimately,
dude, we can't spoil it, of course.
No, well, we could, but we won't. Yeah, we got that Blofeld-like villain, but... And he's somebody that we don't expect to be the villain. I mean, it's this whole, like, da-da-da, oh my god, I can't believe it's you. However, he's under control of this alien. There is an alien on Earth, and this alien is referred to, this alien overlord, as the Cyclops. And you and I both remarked, as we were watching it, that this is Kang. This is Kodos.
Yeah, from The Simpsons, the rubber-suited monster, a tribute to 1950s and 60s tentacled green horror creature things. And again, spoofed wonderfully on The Simpsons. Yeah. But this thing couldn't get any more ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, he's got one eye, he's a little Jabba the Hutt-like, in the fifth sense, he's got these like pus-like secretions, kind of like a lamprey in a certain sense.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Swallows people whole. Just a real sort of feast for the eyes. And just more gore, more people exploding.
More gore, more exploding, more overripe avocados and repurposed, oversized watermelons with goo adhered to the top.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the contamination, it's not a classic by any means. It's sort of notorious because it was placed on the infamous BBFC Video Nasty list, which I find somewhat a bit of an
arbitrary.
Yeah, it's very arbitrary because, I mean, this movie, yes, it is gory. There's a lot of explosions, but man, there's so many worse films out there. There's no degradation. There's no violation. There's no. It's not like, you know.
Except maybe of good taste, but yeah. Okay. Or we can compare it to Last House on the Left.
I was going to say, there's no. I spin your grain, Last House on the Left. There's none of that. It just happens to be a fun, gory sort of alien invasion flick. And I like this movie. I mean, the reality is, when I first discovered this one, it was, again, very early into my horror watching days when I. Was researching any movie out there, and at the time, this was put out on DVD by Anchor Bay. So once I heard about Contamination, I gotta go see it. Luckily, we had a store renting these movies. I rented it, took it home, watched it. I loved it from beginning to end. I loved it. Of course, I'd already seen some of the Fulci films, Argento, so I was familiar with the music of The Goblins, and that was...
Or Singular Goblin.
Yeah, well, but the credits is The Goblins in this one, and I loved it. I mean, and so, yeah, I mean, I guess about 8 months ago, I bought the Blu-ray, direct from himself, Ian McCullough, the Arrow Blu-ray, and I get to revisit it until we just watch it now for the podcast, and watching it now, I realized it's... pretty languid at times, pretty slow. It's not a thrill a minute.
No, it has a similar tone to Nightmare City, but I would argue isn't as fun, although it has much more going on. That was just pure lunkheadedness from the get-go. It has that Italian sensibility.
Well, Nightmare City, in my opinion, had way more going on, like way more ludicrousness going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, in terms of plot, like that was just... It had no plot, but it was just over-the-top, corny, ridiculous, non-stop, frenetic, inane action. Whereas this one was more, geez, do I want to use the term cerebral?
Well, really? I mean...
Somewhat.
What is the plot? Alien avocados found in New York City.
Well, there's actually... Okay, it's a procedural where they're trying to track down what the origin and the provenance of this stuff. Mm. Whereas in Nightmare City, there's just people running from zombies. For basically the bulk of the entire
thing.
They're
not zombies.
No, this is true. they're not zombies according to
Director
Lindsay. They're undead, whatever, and
semantics. Radioactive mutated creatures, what have you. But hey, like I said in our Nightmare City podcast, if it acts like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, it's a duck.
For sure.
If it looks like a zombie, if it, eats... Well, but then again, those zombies are wielding weapons. I mean,
that's a cardinal.
Just go listen to our Nightmare City podcast, and you'll understand what we're saying.
Yeah.
Why are we comparing this to Nightmare City?
Low budget.
Okay.
Same tone. Similar sensibilities. The lack of ability to frame any scene with any sort of coherence or suspense, which is the trademark of Umberto Lenzi,
okay.
who can't really inject any kind of horror into anything he films. It's just a dead eye camera that sits there stoically. Louis Coates has the same sensibilities. These guys are not craftsmen by any means.
Mm.
But be that as it may, that's not a problem. Because there's still something to be said for this, and that's going to segue into what I learned.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we were talking about this ill-fated expedition to Mars, I was curious, because Mars is a notoriously cold planet, even though it's not too dissimilar from our own atmosphere. These two idiots landed on the pole of Mars.
The southern pole, I believe.
And this is a planet that averages minus 100 degrees Celsius, and whose equator... is the warmest part. Why you would land on the coldest part of the cold planet? Are they just trying to make their mission that much more difficult? Who knows? That's got to be a huge technical achievement to land on Mars. It is. The Mars rover. fraught with problems. You don't land in the coldest part and have these two guys. There was a scene where the two of them are trudging through this white, ridiculously conceived, hey, this is a movie that uses olives as alien eggs, conceived landscape, Martian landscape, utterly ridiculous. Oh, another thing I learned. I'm learning a lot.
Okay.
A couple of the hazmat suit guys, they had suits that looked like the costume from Murder Party crossed with...
The Crazies.
The Crazies crossed with, like, the Monty Python Holy Grail knights. This ridiculous helmet. And generally, I can only come up with one thing I learned. So I learned a lot here. Mm-hmm. Silica dust. This is the... They were studying these eggs in one of these corny labs, and the eggs looked directly straight out of a lava lamp. This was so ridiculous. They didn't even go through the trouble of looking at something through a microscope, and you know how difficult that could be to film. So they used a lava lamp, I think, here to replicate the eggs. I learned three things, and boy, was I glad I did. Another thing I've learned. This is a fourth thing, which is unprecedented, because sometimes we're left scrambling, to be honest, for factoids we might have gleaned from something, because it can be difficult as we're just freewheeling through these discussions here, like Bob Dylan. Like that one here? I learned that this may have a tedious opener with helicopter circling New York City and traipsing through the jungle, a la a cannibal movie, but it's, of course, not a cannibal movie, but what it has in common, maybe, with cannibal genre is, I'm saying maybe, animal cruelty. There's a poor white lab rat, one of those with the pink eyes. Mm-hmm. It gets injected with the pathogen because they're studying it and they're trying to figure out what's how it's being transmitted and whatnot. This thing is in some sort of beaker. This rat explodes in fantastic fashion. And I'm hoping the cliched, no animals were harmed in the making of this film, at least not intentionally. Let's hope that the poor rat wasn't victim to the depredations of this filmmaker, a la the poor turtle in Bloody Cannibal Holocaust.
Well, see, that's the whole thing, because, I mean, this movie...
Poor damn turtle.
Some of the special effects are quite wonky in the sense, like, they substituted olives for alien eggs, but that looked real to me. Yeah. And I can just picture, the you know, whoever was in charge of special effects taking a little tiny explosive and sticking it down that rat's gullet.
Yes.
And then hitting the button, and bam, that rat exploded real good.
Where do we draw the line here for cruelty? Because if you have a pet snake, you occasionally feed it live food.
Yeah.
You do so, maybe arguably it would suffer less than if you had a python in your bedroom somewhere. We're learning so much.
This is what I learned about you, because as we were watching the movie, you said, oh shit, a white rat. I hate white rats.
I do hate white rats.
Why do you hate white rats?
Because as an undergrad, I was studying psychobiology, neuroscience, and we did labs where we would insert a cannula into the brain of a lab rat. And this is a syringe into which drugs can be administered while the thing is alive and running around. So picture these poor creatures with this needle syringe thing stuck in their head. That is a pretty invasive surgery when you think about it. Like if I drilled into your head and stuck a cannula into it and filled you full of dopamine. Well, maybe you'd like that. I don't know. But yeah, and I was so put off by this, the method and how we were doing this. Because it was a way to find out if there was a drug that would combat the effects of withdrawal symptoms for dopamine-type drugs. Mm-hmm. So this has a useful clinical purpose to get people off of drugs. But I was appalled by this, these procedures, and I never went further in my career, shall we say. I'm using that with air quotes because I've never had a career of any sort in science. So I felt bad injecting lab rats with liquid cocaine and various other substances. Let's put it that way. So there was different experiments that we took part in. But
all you're doing the liquid cocaine was injecting it?
No, I never touched any liquid cocaine.
Yeah, okay.
I did not have sex with that woman. Yeah. No, honestly, I did not touch any of the stuff. This was for a lab withdrawal effects to ameliorate those. Yeah, you don't want to know what some of these poor lab rats are subjected to in these labs. So the poor rat, I felt bad for them. Mm. And they knew when I was coming. Yeah, I extricated myself from that, and I can sleep peacefully. What did you learn?
Yeah, why is it always Mars? How many planets are in the solar system?
Billions and billions, to quote Carl Sagan. Right. No, well, it's because its atmosphere is so close to ours.
Okay, but like, this is the thing. Every time there's an alien movie, alien, it's always Mars. Yeah. And like,
Mercury's too hot.
No, listen. The other planets at this point must have an inferiority complex. Saturn, well, Saturn's not even a planet anymore.
Yeah, it's just gas.
But Venus and Uranus and
No,
there's a three.
I know. Uranus.
Yeah. Mercury. Why not one of those planets? Once, just once.
Oh, I know.
I'd love, you know,
or even the moons of Jupiter. Like, what's that? The Titan moon.
Yeah.
I think that's got to have featured somewhere. I can't name it, but sure.
You know, I'm
make
like,
up a planet.
That got off a movie by Brian De Palma, Mission to Mars. Well, why couldn't it just be Mission to Uranus? Again, I know this is very lowbrow.
That's like, yeah.
I'm wondering why.
Hotel cable territory.
Why is it always Mars? What else did I learn? I learned that, as much as you are deriding Luigi Cozzi, yes, I mean, the man is, usually the protege learns a bit from the mentor. And I will say he's far from Dario Argento in terms of his craft, in terms of his originality. If Argento is the Italian Hitchcock, then Luigi Cozzi is the. I have no...
The Joel Schumacher? I don't know.
You have this decades-long vendetta with Joel Schumacher.
Because he's terrible.
The day that you went to the cinema and saw Batman and Robin was the day that,
Hey, it's not like he's not done anything else equally bad.
True.
He's not done a single good thing, I would argue.
The Lost Boys?
Oh, okay.
There you go.
All right. The single good thing.
I like Luigi Cozzi. He's a nice man. We're friends on Facebook. We've chatted a bit here and there. I really, one of these days, I'm dying to go to Profondo Rosso and to walk around this emporium. Hopefully Cozzi will be there that day. So, yeah.
I just picture him like behind the cash register.
Yeah,
selling, commemorative Argento coffee mugs or something.
Sure. I'd love him to
ring
my purchase.
Sure, why not?
And I even buy a replica of these gigantic olive / avocado / watermelons. They're for sale.
So how would you ring this one up out of our 1 to 5 scale here?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because when I originally saw this movie, I recall it being a lot more crackerjack than it was. It is quite languid. There's a lot of really. This is a movie that you could watch with a buddy and just talk over it, like we did. And all of a sudden, oh wow, look at that!
Yeah, exactly.
So it is rather. It's slow at times, but there's enough cool, slimy, bodies exploding, gore effects to record. Going into it, I thought I was going to give it 3 stars, but I'm going to lower it now down to about 2 3/4.
Yeah,
2 3/4. How about you?
Well, from our seat here on the balcony, which is not a balcony, but just a sofa, so we're not Ebert and Roper / Siskel, I'm going to have to agree with you here. Mm-hmm. No, I don't have to, but good, 2 3/4. Going to give the patented quarter reviews, but yeah, a little few pacing issues, some terrific cornball 1960s sci-fi movie dialogue. It's just fantastic.
But, I mean...
But, yeah, don't great
take,
gore.
Don't take my relatively low star rating as a non-recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
This is... It's recommended. See this movie. It's a fun one. It's just not as rip-roaring as I remember it to be. Mm-hmm. But it is a fun movie. And, like I said before, anytime you have an Italian movie with Ian McCullough, you're in for some sort of good time. So, yeah, it's worth seeing.
If you have any Italian horrors / rip-offs, hell, anything, and it doesn't matter what genre, because we cover lots of them, from musicals to sci-fi to action, predominantly horror, hit us up on Twitter, awful_movies, and we will definitely check out any of your suggestions. We're batting 1,000 when it comes to suggestions that we decide to cover. So nothing has been so off the charts that we've not covered it, so we would love it if you check it. Hit us up.
Your home movies, perhaps that might go.
By
the wayside. But other than that, we're pretty open to suggestions.
So. Yes, and check out our website with reviews and lists and giveaways 3 times a week. ReallyAwfulMovies.com, and of course, check us out as you have been doing. Thank you so much. Every weekend, new episodes of the Really Awful Movies podcast. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.